Go ahead and be seated. Okay, the last matter we have on today, docket number 67428, Shu versus State. And Mr. Waters, are you ready to proceed? Yes.
Good afternoon, Justices. May it please the Court. My name is William Waters. I'm with the Clark County Public Defender's Office, and I represent Mr. Joshua Shu on appeal. We were not the attorney of record at trial. That was a private attorney who then withdrew post-sentencing. We picked the case for appeal. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Shu is currently serving life in prison, 10 years to life in prison, for violating a facially unconstitutional statute. There's a number of important issues in this case.
Why wasn't that brought to light down below?
You know, again, if this had been our office, I could probably give you more insight into that. Unfortunately, since it was a private attorney, I don't know what the thinking was. I don't really know. I think, at least to me, the issue is pretty obvious when you read the statute.
So wouldn't that be more appropriate for post-conviction?
I mean, it certainly could be brought up in post-conviction, and, you know, I'm sure, depending on what happens here, that will be brought up. But I do think judicial economy also militates in favor of maybe addressing it now as well, because this court might ultimately reach the issue on if the post-conviction is denied in the district court, it might get here anyway, and then, you know, we're sort of back to whether, you know, this was a legitimate issue that you should have raised or not. So I do think that judicial economy sort of suggests maybe we consider this now. I think, you know, given the serious infirmities in the statute, I think it certainly warrants taking a look at it now. I wish it would have been litigated below. Again, since this wasn't our office, I don't know. I can't give you much insight into why, if that was a conscious decision or if it was just an oversight or whatever. But I do think it's pretty glaringly obvious that there's a problem with this statute. And, you know, we're all lawyers. We've all taken First Amendment jurisprudence in constitutional law class. And any time you're criminalizing images, works of art, pictures, photographs, whatever it is, any time you're doing that, you know, red lights should go off. Like, wait a minute, like, what are we doing here? I understand that child pornography is a special area of the law that doesn't receive First Amendment protection, and I'm certainly not suggesting that change. I'm not suggesting obscenity should start receiving First Amendment protection. The problem here is that what you have are images that are neither obscene, because the definition is not the Miller standard for obscenity, and you have images that are not child pornography. Now, what the legislature did was they tried to say it was child pornography. This court has recognized that 200, 700, and 710, 730 are the child pornography laws in Nevada. So I think it's interesting that they put this sexual portrayal into that section, because clearly what they were trying to do was call this pornography when it's objectively, just based on the definition, cannot be pornography. Certainly can't be child pornography, because the U.S. Supreme Court has said child pornography is limited to images of children engaged in sexual conduct. This definition for sexual portrayal in 700 subsection 4 doesn't require any of that. Doesn't require sexual conduct at all. What it does is it changes, I mean, it's prosecutable under that section depending on, I guess, if you think a pedophile either took the image or possessed the image. And that's all you need to really show, because the definition, which is appeals to the prurient interest, which also isn't defined, but pedophilia, I think we would all agree, is a prurient interest in sex. So any image of a child taken by a pedophile, clothed, unclothed, whatever, is going to be prurient if you're judging it based on the things that were going in the mind of the photographer. Conversely, it can become prurient if you're judging it based on what the pedophile does with the image once he possesses it. So we have a real problem here. Honestly, if you look at the legislative history of the statute, it was a remedy without a problem, because you had the other section of the statute, which deals with prohibiting you from creating images of children engaged in sexual conduct, and sexual conduct is clearly defined by the NRS. It's the exact same definition as every state, and the federal government. The federal government's prohibition on creating or possessing child pornography is the almost identical definition of sexual conduct, with the exception They use lascivious instead of lewd, but I think we all recognize that they're basically interchangeable. Lascivious is essentially lewd. So you had that statute. And part of the definition of sexual conduct is the lewd exhibition of the genitals. So you had all the tools, the legislature had all the tools at its disposal to prosecute people, certainly for what Mr. Hsu had done. Well, not certainly, but arguably what Mr. Hsu had done. You could prosecute him under the section that involves like creating images of children engaged in sexual conduct, which, you know, that sort of satisfied the state's interest. The problem is the legislature saw something that offended them very deeply in 1995 when there was an individual who apparently was going out to public places and filming children, all clothed, by the way, and marketing it as, you know, something that would appeal to pedophiles. And I think the legislature was concerned about that, and, you know, they were offended by that. But the problem is, what their remedy was to create a law which essentially polices the private thoughts of the person either possessing or creating that image.
Well, didn't they struggle? You said this is ambiguous, and you look to legislative history. Didn't they, at least in the assembly, didn't they struggle very much with the overbreadth? And as to what standard was going to be used, whether it was an objective standard, a community standard, and they realized just how overbroad this could be.
I agree that there was deep concerns with this statute in the legislature, and it went through a number of revisions.
And they just kind of punted, and then when it got to the Senate side, and then it got a little bit better defined.
I would respectfully disagree with better, but I would say that, yes, they then tried to, I guess, fix some of the deficiencies. That's correct. Interestingly, though, if you look at the legislative history, there was testimony, and I believe it was either an officer or someone who actually said, there's a decision from Tennessee which just came out, and that's the Knox case from the Third Circuit, which actually said that you can prohibit, you know, lewd images of the genitals, clothed or unclothed. So, you know, the implication being, like, I think that the statute we have is pretty good. Like, that would probably cover the concern that you have about this individual who's going around Las Vegas taking these images of children. You know, I don't know. It's a weird, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to the legislature. I think they really tried very hard. They saw what they perceived as a problem. They tried very hard to come up with a way to deal with it. But in doing so, they left a standard which basically leaves it up to the discretion of a prosecutor. If the prosecutor believes this person's a pedophile, then any image of a child that person either creates or possesses, which isn't artistic, scientific, political, becomes child pornography. As long as you convince 12 jurors that, you know, he likes images of children, he took these images of children who objectively, if any of us took that image, it would be, you know, nothing more. Like, for example, I'll just give an example. Facebook, social media. Parents post pictures of their children on social media all the time. Pictures of their children at the beach. Doing things, activities that children all over the country do every day. A pedophile is going to look at those pictures, and by virtue of his, you know, whatever's going on in his head, is going to be attracted to that. Is going to have a prurient interest in that. And a Facebook photo certainly doesn't have, it's not political speech, it's not scientific. And if the parent who took the picture is not an artist, then there's no artistic value in it. And by the way, the legislature also failed by defining, Justice Peregrine mentioned that they did sort of struggle with the idea of, like, well, what standards do we apply to this? The statutory text itself, though, doesn't apply a community standard. It just says, you know, if something appeals to the prurient interest, how do you define that? Who do you look to? What standards do you apply? We don't know. But if it does, and then as long as you don't think that it has, you know, scientific, political, artistic, or whatever, again, well, according to whom? You know, I think we can all find people in Las Vegas or anywhere, quite frankly, who are going to find certain images not to have artistic, scientific, political, or value.
Mr. Waters, I'm curious, and I understand your comments on that, on the unit of prosecution in the Castaneda case. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, yeah, and so Castaneda comes out after I'd filed the opening brief, I did ask to amend the brief, and thankfully the court allowed me to. So I think this is very similar to Castaneda. I understand the state's position, but now Mr. Hsu was charged with both creating the images and then subsequently possessing 10 images, 8 involving C.I., who's the younger child, because the age difference in the statute, there's an age difference in the statute between, you know, creating or possessing. So all 10 of those possession counts for the images, 2 images of the unknown male, and then the 8 images involving C.I. were found on the exact same computer, in the exact same folder, in his house, right? So that's very similar to Castaneda, where the state found the images, or the police found the images on different devices. I'm just going to finish up this last thought, because I think I'm going into my rebuttal time. But did nothing at trial to differentiate, like, when they were downloaded, when they were, if and when they were modified, viewed, so forth. Now, I know the state's position is, well, he recorded them, so obviously he possessed them. Well, you know, I would caution you against that. This court has already said that, you know, possession is not lesser included of creation. So there's a problem with just adopting that sort of idea that, well, you know, he necessarily possessed it if he created it. Mr. Hsu obviously denied creating it, and I know that there was some evidence to suggest otherwise. That's, you know, and the jury seemed to believe that. But again, for example, he's on the video, I guess, manipulating the camera at certain points, right? So that certainly could prove that he created it. But it doesn't prove that, you know, whether he left the camera there for a period of days or whatnot, whether he then immediately took it back to his other house, uploaded it onto his computer, watched it, like, you know, a number of times or whatever. So I think that this is very similar to Castaneda. So I would urge the court to strike down the statute, because that gets Mr. Hsu the relief on the 29 counts. But if not, and I think Castaneda controls at minimum to the 10 possession counts, and at very, very, very minimum to the 2 counts related to the unidentified male. Because even if you accept the state's argument that, well, gee whiz, since he filmed it, then he obviously possessed the counts involving C.I., well, you do have the 2 counts involving the 2 other males, which, very much like Castaneda, they never accused him of creating it. They were on the same location of the computer, so at the very bare minimum, you know, those 2 counts would violate the unit of prosecution as described in Castaneda. So,
thank you.
Yeah, 3 minutes left, I'm going to reserve the rest of that time. Thanks.
McDonald. Good afternoon. May it please the court, Ryan McDonald from the state. I suppose I'll start with the Castaneda issue as we developed in the supplemental answering brief. As to the 8 photos of the children in the household, there was testimony developed that these were taken at different times and developed at different times as well. As to the 2 unidentified male children, the only reason that issue was not developed is because the appellant failed to raise it below. So there is information missing in the record as to the time and date of those 2 photos, although the detective did testify that he could have identified them by time and date of upload if he were asked. Moving on to the constitutional issue, I think the salient question here is, can the law in the state of Nevada proscribe sexual portrayal that is done with a purient interest and that lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or economic motives? So I think that's really the question here, and that gets into the overbreadth challenge, and that gets into the vagueness challenge.
You think we should, as the chief mentioned to Mr. Waters at the beginning, should we address that since it wasn't raised in the district court? Or does your office want us to delve into that and deal with that particular issue?
Oh, if you're giving us a choice, I would say no.
Well, I don't know if we're giving you a choice. I'm just curious what your position is.
It's tricky because, on the one hand, it should have been raised below, and there are, I think I found a case out of New Jersey where they specifically said that appellant's failure to raise the constitutional issue below meant it wasn't going to be reviewed on appeal. But then this court has also said that they review constitutional issues de novo. So I think both
are true to a certain extent. I do believe in general that these issues should be developed in the district court in the first instance, particularly when it comes to a constitutional issue that the appellant argues he cannot be convicted of a crime at all. That certainly should have been raised well before trial.
Well, that's, I guess, what is perplexing to me. It's such a big issue, and having the benefit of having it vetted below would have been a great benefit to us.
Absolutely, I agree, particularly when it comes to the issue, which is the purient interest in sex. Whose interest is that? Is that the interest of the person creating the depiction? Is that the interest of the jury when they're taking this case under advisement and looking at the jury instruction and saying, purient interest in sex, whose interest? I believe that the purient interest speaks to the intent of the person who is making the photo. So let's use the, the Facebook example of, I think the hypothetical was, parent posts picture of child on their publicly accessible Facebook site, and then pedophile goes and downloads that picture for pedophile's own purient interest.
But how, the statute doesn't say that. The statute is ambiguous, so how do we know the parent couldn't be the one that has a purient interest as well and be scooped into this? And that's why, you know, the overbreadth of this is, well, it's compelling.
I think the question is, so it's a criminal statute, and I think it's in fervor that says, since it is a criminal statute, there has to be a scienter element in the statute. So I take that to mean the purient interest is the lascivious intent of the person who's making the image. Now, how do you prove that it's not the parent who had the lascivious intent? Well, that's when you take in the totality of the circumstances. What is the picture? Picture is baby at the beach. Does that in some way show that the person who created that image has some kind of lascivious intent? And no, it does not. Contrast that with this situation where you have a furtive recording of children in their most private moments using the bathroom and using the shower. Now, do the circumstances there augur for a lascivious intent on the part of the person who's creating that image? I would say yes. So I believe that that is the line that can be drawn, and that's why it's not overbroad, is, you know, in appellant's brief, he talks about dance moms and movies that would be swept in by this criminal statute. However, that's why the legislature added the slap language, the serious artistic merit. So are these movies, American Beauty, Dance Moms, do they have artistic merit? Yes. So they would not be criminalized by that statute.
What more would you need from the state's perspective to vet the constitutional question if it were not reached now?
As far as development in the record?
Yeah. Isn't this, I mean, you folks have done a good job briefing this. Isn't this legal question adequately posted up for the court to decide, or is there something that the state feels it would need to develop as part of the review of this constitutional question?
No, I don't believe that. Like I said when I started, I don't, this whole issue of whether it needs to be raised below, but if it's being reviewed de novo, does it actually need to be raised below? I think strictly speaking, it does not, when it's a pure constitutional issue. However, factual matters often spill over into that constitutional analysis. So would it be helpful for the, you know, the district court, having seen all of these videos and making a determination, having that factual background of whether what it's going to determine who has the purient interest or however it's going to interpret that statute.
I guess, Mr. McDonough, to follow up on that, my concern is this: the Supreme Court's not a fact finder. Appellate courts don't do that. We review records and make conclusions of law and all that. But can you say, in this case, is it developed enough that we can do our legal analysis here, as Justice Harris you raised, or do you feel it's not developed enough where we should tackle this issue?
If I had to choose, I would say it is developed enough
for
this court to do a legal analysis of the issue.
Could you comment on the, I'm sorry, could you return to the Castaneda analysis and the unit of prosecution question again and restate your position on that? I've been thinking about what you said initially, and I'd like to comment on that a little bit further, if you would.
Well, as I understand it, the issue in Castaneda was that the 15 photographs or videos, I think they were photographs, were undated, and there was no testimony as to whether, like in Wilson, these photographs were taken as one kind of criminal transaction or not. Right. So as I read Castaneda, it's kind of an opinion that says, well, you don't have a great record below, and to the extent that, you know, I guess it's a rule of lenity kind of situation, to the extent there's nothing in the record to support 15 counts under that analysis, then we have to vacate 14 of the 15. Here, there was testimony in the record as to the female child testified to her depictions in the videos and to the male child's depictions. So the possession counts obtained to the male child, but the female child testified, this happened around this time, this was a different time because I had different hair, or I was wearing something else, and that's how I can tell it was made at discrete times. So the record is there, unlike it is in Castaneda, except to the two unknown male children, which once again, particularly with that issue, it was not raised below, so there was no development because of that failure to raise it below.
Okay, I understand. Thanks.
No one has anything further? I'll submit it on the briefs. Thank you.
Just to sort of finish up with the idea or the issue of whether we should consider it, whether this court should consider it now. And I greatly appreciate Mr. McDonald conceding that point. Well, not maybe he didn't concede it, but at least acknowledging. I mean, I don't know what fact, this is a facial challenge to the statute. I don't know what facts are going to develop below. This court would be reviewing it de novo anyway. So I think it is appropriate now. Again, I don't know why it wasn't addressed below. I wish it would have been. Who knows how Judge Adair would have ruled on it. Ultimately, you know, if she had granted Mr. Hsu's favor, I'm pretty sure the state would have appealed that to this court and still be considering it. But so I think it's certainly, we have what we need. I think Mr. McDonald, or whomever wrote the brief for the state, did a phenomenal job. So we've got everything we need. This court has repeatedly said if it doesn't require development of facts, we can address constitutional issues for the first time on appeal. So
does it have a larger collateral consequence that we're treating it as error that can be reviewed in the first instance at this level for others who may have been incarcerated under that statute?
Honestly, well, you mean like the court's announced a new rule of law or just...
Yeah, I mean...
Well, I think if this court strikes down the statute, I don't think you're announcing a new rule of law, clarifying what was already there, so I don't think it would have retroactive application. Or, I'm sorry, it would have retroactive application. However, I don't know if many people have been prosecuted under this law. I mean, this law is a very Nevada unique kind of law. I've looked at every state and the federal government, and again, because it arose out of this one particular incident in Las Vegas, that's the reason why they created
it. It's a handmade statute. Yeah.
Exactly. There's nothing else in the United States even close. Now, there are some states that prohibit you filming children in the nude, but in the Massachusetts case being the most significant, which is in the briefs, but you have to go behind the statute, and what they did was they added a lascivious intent. So they were very, in this gets back to your Honor's question, Mr. McDonald, about whose intent. What Massachusetts did to fix their statute was put it on the photographer. So the photographer has to have the lascivious intent. And it's right there in the statute. And then further, they define what the lascivious intent is, or how a jury can determine what that is. And amazingly, what it is the DOST factors. So Massachusetts created a law which I think did withstand constitutional scrutiny.
But with a lot of help from their court.
Correct. But it went all the way to the United States Supreme Court, who I guess said it was moot at this point because, you know, we've looked at it now that they've changed the statute, it's sort of been fixed. I think they did kick it back for just like an as-applied challenge, but like 3 seconds left, I think.
Go ahead and finish your thoughts.
So nothing in the statute suggests whose intent we're dealing with here. And in fact,
it's a very peculiar statute.
If you look at the legislative history, there was talk both ways. We want to stop people from doing this, but we also want to stop people from enjoying this kind of stuff. So there was discussion about not only punishing the person that creates it, but really putting, which by the way is consistent with sort of child pornography jurisprudence, which is if you dry up the market for it, if you take, that's why, you know, the case where the litigant said, well, just like obscenity, why can't I possess it? I'm not creating it. And they said, well, of course you the states can prohibit you from possessing it because we want to dry up the market for it. It's such a unique area that we're not going to give it any sort of constitutional protection whatsoever. So I think in the legislature you had some who were concerned about let's dry up the market for this. If no one wants this stuff, or if we prohibit you from possessing it, then, you know, there'd be no incentive to create it, which will, that seems to suggest that the intent would be on the person who possesses it. Because again, my understanding from legislative history was that these were very innocuous images of children, just doing everyday things that children do, but it was the marketing. And this was 1995, so it was probably like at the early days of the internet, it was the way that these things were marketed, and they were very clearly marketed towards pedophiles, like, you know, you will enjoy this stuff or whatever. So it's really unclear whose intent. And I disagree with Mr. McDonald that you can assume that they meant it was the intent of the photographer. But even then, so the problem is, if the photographer has a parading intent, and he takes the non-sexual, non-graphic photo of a child, again, because he's a pedophile, any image of a child is potentially going to be parading to him. At that moment, as long as it's not artistic, as long as it's not scientific, as long as it's not political, doesn't it take on the character of, a prohibited image at that moment, but he takes it? Well, does that change then? Because now it falls into like my hands, because there's nothing that does anything for me about the particular image. So that's the problem. So if it's the photographer's intent, the moment the picture is taken, it becomes that prohibited image because his intent is so important in the taking of the picture because there's no definitions about what actually has to be in the image, just a prurient interest, which again, photographer's a pedophile, children are his prurient interest, everything about them. So.
Does that answer your question?
It does, but
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just rambling. I apologize.
No,
rambling just a little.
You allowed just a little tiny bit of that.
I was just trying to interrupt your
train of thought.
There's also, and just finally, I apologize for taking up too much of your time, but even if your honors don't believe that there's any fundamental constitutional problems here. You know, we do still have these issues with the jury instructions, which I think are hugely important. There weren't proper definitions for some of the essential elements of the crimes. I think this court should consider maybe adopting the DOST standard or the DOST factors as well to determine what is a lewd exhibition. Generals, almost every state in the feds do it. So
maybe next time you ask for additional time.
Sorry.
I'm serious. Okay. Instead of a 30-minute argument, maybe a 60-minute argument on something like this.
I know you
have a lot to say, both of you.
Well, thank you for your time, and I appreciate
your arguments and the briefing on this, and the matter will stand submitted, and we will stand in recess.